Is this child trafficking?
Oh, absolutely, 100% legalized. Legalized human trafficking of children in every way.
What up, everybody? Welcome back to the Empowered Millennials podcast with me, your host, Angela Gentile. I appreciate you all being here today because this podcast is all about sharing stories and finding ways of living beyond the status quo. We stand up for our truth. We push through discomfort and the bullshit limitations, and we just find joy in whatever way feels honest to us. So if you're new here, make sure you're following wherever you're listening. And if you're an OG or a first timer, and this episode brings you some value, you know what I'm going to ask you. Please, please, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It helps in this world. It helps as a solo independent creator, producer, podcast. Like I'm all the things. So please, please, please leave a review. And for my single and child free listeners looking for community, check out the Single and Child Free Network. It's our private group. None of that Facebook hellscape stuff, just real honest connection. So signing up gives you access to the Single Child Free Network and a nationwide list of single and child free women ready to connect with you. The link is in my show notes and on my social media bio. So go there, click and find your tribe. Okay. Because we have a topic today that comes up, I think, a lot in the single and child free community. Like when women say they don't want kids or can't have them, there's still a push for natalism. And the typical response is, well, you can always adopt. But there's so much more to that conversation that we don't discuss or leave out. And once again, it glorifies this act of becoming a mother without the consideration and impact on others, which is why I am so excited to introduce today's guest, Desiree, which you probably better know her as the outspoken adoptee, who is here to share her story, shed light on the adoption system, and give us a lot to think about today. So Desiree is a domestic private infant adoptee, adopted transracially by white parents in Utah. She was left in a hospital by her biological family due to racial and religious biases, and she grew up in a household that taught children to be seen and not heard. And I know that is something in that millennial Gen X space that we know all too well, and that silence could have kept her invisible, but instead she found her voice. Desiree is a fearless advocate for exposing the corrupt billion-dollar private adoption system and shining light on the ways children are commodified and silenced. So her mission is to advocate for children to speak boldly and to empower other adoptees. So Desiree, thank you so much for being here and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you. This is amazing. I love crossovers and all kinds of things like this. I love to highlight adoption issues that society doesn't really think about.
Yeah, I think this conversation is so important. Like I said, my community of women is we're very happy being child-free. And sometimes, you know, the women who do find their way into me did want to be parents at some point or did want to be a mother at some point. But I think the point is there's always this push for motherhood without a larger conversation.
Exactly.
Whether that is like a cis hetero relationship where you are biologically having children or like, oh, just take someone else's child.
Yes. 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 There is a sense of almost entitlement that there's a guarantee that everyone is going to have kids in life.
Yeah.
I think that we grow up with that mindset, especially as young girls, we are molded and shaped to have this idea of marriage, family, you know, picket fences, dreaming of our wedding, which is so weird. I feel now as a woman, thinking back to my wedding as a child is, it's weird. We should be thinking about our wedding as a child.
Like thinking about what you, like how we want to change the world and save the planet and be a good person or like anything else.
Exactly. So, but planning my wedding, my fictitious wedding that may or may not ever happen.
Yeah. And then we're going to give you toys so that you can like reenact it and play it out. Cool. Just so everybody knows a little tidbit about Angela. I never did that. When I played with Barbies, I had a whole like Barbie bookcase, because we didn't have no dream house growing up. I had a Barbie bookcase. It was a bookcase.
She lived in
Barbie was set up and she was doing cool shit. And then I would just stand back and be like, look at what Barbie's doing. Look how cool she is.
The first Barbie that I ever bought myself with my own money was the day to night Barbie. She was an office girl. She went to work and then she did party. She turned her skirt around. She got to go party.
Yeah. Didn't it like turn inside out and then it was shiny? I think that's what it was. Yeah. It was like shiny.
She had a briefcase. She had her own credit cards. And I loved that for her. That was
enough.
My type of Barbie.
That was our girl. And this is why we're connecting. So can we kind of like start at the beginning? I think just giving people some background on like the origins of your birth and your circumstances and how you were adopted transracially and like how that kind of shaped who you are.
Yeah. So my biological parents, I found out, had been in a relationship for years. They were living together. From talking to my biological father, they seemed happy. He did not know a lot about her family. He said that they didn't really speak a lot. So he went to work one day, he came home, and his very pregnant wife or girlfriend was gone. She was just gone. She tells the story as he was a one-night stand in a bar. Her story is completely opposite. And then the grandmother who facilitated this adoption, her mother, her story was that she was so mentally challenged that she couldn't care for a child and the father wanted nothing to do with the child. So there's three whole stories that I have to kind of piece back together. However, talking to my biological father, and it's not to give him more credit in this than, you know, and say that they're liars. But I can definitely see where he would be telling more of a truthful story. His memory is like nothing else. Mm-hmm. He's never really lied. He still has a lot of affection for this woman who just left him and took off with his child, and he had no clue what happened to his child, which is a lot of why our relationship didn't work, because he's still in love with her.
Interesting.
My birth mother is LDS. Her whole family's LDS. The LDS religion.
Can you be specific for anybody who doesn't know?
The Mormons, the Latter-day Saints. Okay. They have a deeply rooted inherent belief that anyone with brown skin, black skin is cursed. And so they are lesser than. So growing up in Utah, Mormons, and not being a Mormon child in my adoptive family was very difficult. But because of that inherent belief, my birth grandmother used that as a tool to coerce my mother into just being okay, leaving me at a hospital. She ended up getting pregnant 6 months later. And my half sister is all white. She was kept and raised primarily by her grandmother, the same one who eradicated me from the family, which I find odd, but also was very much in proximity community and being raised by her mom as well. So this whole mental thing, none of it, you can start to see the holes in the story. My adoption is a result of the racism and all of that. Then my adoption with my adoptive family is she had three biological sons. She wanted a girl. She had always wanted a girl. And talking to her doctor, he said, you need to change the stud. And they just decided adoption, that's how you get what you want. And we still see that today. You know, if you didn't get the gender you want, just adopt. Oh, you're infertile. Oh, just adopt. There's all just adopt at the end of every problem. So the end of her problem of not having a girl was to just adopt. But she went one step further, and because it's her hard-earned money, she could custom order. So she went, and I was told this my entire life, that she went and requested a peanut butter skinned baby girl with black curly hair. She had this idea in her head of what she wanted. She fetishized all of my features, everything about me. My baby blanket that she painted is a very darker melanated child even. Mm-hmm. So you can see her fetishization for black children in real, you know, in real working time. So they adopted me after 5 years and approximately 9-ish months after their last child was born. They went and adopted me. I was a 7-day-old baby, grew up in Utah, like I said, northern Utah. So there really is not a lot of diversity. Growing up in the 80s, there really was no diversity. I was the diversity in my school, essentially. For many, many years. I know third grade to fourth grade, my mom had a stroke. My adopted mother had a massive stroke. We moved into a smaller home that was near an Air Force base in my city. And I got to go for 1 year to this school that had Polynesian kids, black kids, Asian kids, Hispanic kids. And I was just shocked that this existed.
Yeah. Could you just like exhale when you went to school? Like, it's safe here. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
I was being invited to birthday parties and things that I didn't totally get in my other neighborhood. These are kids that I essentially went to kindergarten all the way to graduation to school with. And then I ended up having to go back to my old school. So a lot of, even though in a roundabout way, getting out of my biological family on my maternal side did keep me from certain racism within my family, I still went into a family that was not equipped to deal with racism, that hadn't deconstructed white supremacy, that still had a lot of internalized biases and put me in a community where I didn't fit.
Mm-hmm. And just thought everything would be okay, right?
Exactly. There's a lot of assumed acclimation when it's an adopted child, and even more assumed acclimation the younger we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you were 7 days old.
So they just assume that, you know, any mother will do at that point. It's not our mother, it's any mother at that point.
And is that like kind of the motto of adoption?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Love. All a child needs is love. And we know that that's not true. Children need more than just love. We need genetic mirroring. We need to see ourselves. I had to wait 19 years to see a genetic representation of myself through my child. And even that comes at such a high cost of, now he is almost like a secondary adoptee in a way, because now he is completely cut off from all my biological paternal, maternal side. And then he also has this strained relationship with my adoptive family on his own accord.
Right.
He made a choice as an adult to go no contact with them as well. And then he also has his dad's side of the family. And that is a very strained relationship, again, because of Mormonism and racism.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really complex and very layered, you know?
Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't feel like I thought totally about how this was going to impact even my children.
Right. Right.
You know, I get this genetic mirroring, you know, and having a child should never be about healing anything in you.
Say that again. Yeah.
And people use children to heal. Yep. People, you know, we see it all the time. People suffer with infertility. and they heal themselves with someone else's child through adoption.
Like, this baby saved me.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I hear that comment all the time. You're giving this innocent, voiceless, and vulnerable child a job to heal adult trauma.
Right. Well, but all, yes. And, but even just saying that sort of like glorifies like white saviorism.
Oh, absolutely. And adoption does that. We were talking, me and a mutual that's adopted, but she was adopted transracially in reverse. She is a white child adopted by a Black family.
Okay.
So her story does not center whiteness as the savior, and people cannot compute that situation. My story and most adoption stories center whiteness as the savior. Her story does not make sense to society because it centers Blackness as the savior. And the amount of hate that she receives from just trying to tell her story is ridiculous, because people cannot center Blackness as the savior.
Yeah.
In the story.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? And she's obviously got her own traumas and stuff. Right. Does not come without air.
Yeah.
Done to the field. we're using human children, whether they are born biologically to us or they come into our family in a different way, using your child to heal anything in you or to get what you wanted.
Right.
You're using a child.
Right.
The child had no say in any of it.
They didn't, like you said, they didn't consent to the job that they were bestowed at 7 years old to fulfill, whether it is an unhealed childhood wound or some fetishized version of saviorism, right? Or whatever it is, either way, it's cutting off that child from cultural significance, cultural support, racial identity,
right?
While promoting this very, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, myopic view, I guess, of what, of what parenthood or motherhood should look like. And it kind of sounds like in your situation that you as a person weren't necessarily considered, but it was more of like what you represent as the final piece in the puzzle of the family. So when you talk about growing up being unseen and unheard, I mean, that would make sense, right? So can you talk a little bit about some of the challenges that you faced in your your adoptive family, and like how that sort of like contributed to maybe a negative sense of identity and
voice? Oh, absolutely.
I don't want to like put words or assume. So
I know exactly. I'm pretty sure I know what you're saying. I feel as though what harmed my idea of self was growing up in whiteness.
Yeah.
So much whiteness when I was fetishized for the things that were not of whiteness. My hair, I was not allowed to have my hair straight. Very rarely will you ever see my hair. I do have a few pictures of my hair straight, and that was usually due to someone else taking care of me when she had a stroke, because she would sit there and meticulously make the curls because she loved it. She fetishized my lips, my skin, all of it. Go out in the, you know, she had no problem with me being out in the sun all day because she loved the
darker.
But then in hindsight, I'm going out in the world and the world is hating those things about me. And it's this mixed, this complete mixed message.
Yeah.
At five was the first time I ever remember being asked, "What are you?" It was a little boy. He said, "What are you?" And I looked at him and I was like, "A girl." Yeah. You know, I'm like, I don't understand the question.
Yeah.
And he said, "No, why are you brown?"
Yeah.
And I was like, "Oh,
And I don't know too much about children and development, but I do feel like when, like, that's a normal question for kids to ask when they don't see diversity, which is why it's important, but it's not your responsibility to answer that question. It's Timmy's mommy to be like, well, Timmy, there's this thing called melanin.
Yes. I should be the
sole proprietor of that.
I love it. But also, it's hard to go out in the world and have these people berate you all day long. And then when I would go home and say, hey, little Timmy said XYZ to me, it was always met with, well, what did you do? I was always the one who must have done something to get a reaction, whether it was a slur or just an ugly comment.
Right.
I must have done something to get that person to say that.
Mm.
And I'm like, no, I existed. So it got to the point where I learned very early on that rhetoric of children are seen, not heard, really, they meant it. They meant it. And I just shut down. I stopped talking. I stopped having those conversations because it's like I'm going out in the world and then coming home and that world exists at home still.
Yeah.
I don't get to come home and feel comforted. You know, even Black children that are growing up in their Black families, but maybe go to a predominantly white school, they still have their Black parents to come home and deconstruct their feelings to and be heard, be seen, be validated.
For sure.
Going home and none of that's happening.
And there's a shared
problem.
A shared experience of of whiteness, you know, through, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I mean, what I'm hearing right now, like, I'm just going to say it. Do you think that was by design, you know, in a way, like we're adopting this racially different child and is it just that they weren't aware or there was, again, fulfilling, this is what I'm trying to say, fulfilling that like white saviorism of like.
All of it.
Well, yeah. Okay.
All of it. There's a lot that I didn't realize that I have had to deconstruct about my childhood.
Yeah.
So my adopted mother's family is Romani culture.
Okay.
So when a lot of people view travelers or Romani culture as peddlers. So the men go off and do construction and asphalt. The women do beautician work, cleaning, that type of thing. My adopted mother, her mother and her sister peddled purses. They sold purses to local hair salons. They would go all day to hair salons. And I used to love this as a kid because I felt special. I felt like I was the one. It came with some icky, but at the end of the day, I got to ride in my granny's smooth Cadillac and we got to go to lunch. And so for me, I'm thinking, ooh, I'm the special one. None of my other cousins get to go on this. Yeah. But as an adult, I understand it now. This was the social media before the social media of adopted children, monetizing off of them.
Yeah.
I was monetized in the way that they would dress me up, do my hair, and parade me around. So they were essentially these good Christian women who adopted this poor little Black child. How could you not buy a purse from them?
Mm-hmm. Look how good they are.
Yep.
Look what they did. Look what, yep. Yeah.
And we're seeing that same thing on social media. We're seeing these people adopt these children and then they have a sponsored ad from Dove. And I'm like, could you imagine being the birth mother and you are seeing your baby being used as an influencer's ad?
Yeah.
When all you needed was a few hundred to $1,000 possibly to keep your child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and for anyone listening, I highly recommend Gretchen Sisson's book, Relinquished. That is such an eye-opening book about the true sides of adoption.
Yeah.
That is that people don't want to see the infant adoption. You know, people really are out here believing that so many women just do not want their babies. And yeah. they're out here like Juno. Juno was a horrible movie to paint as she just didn't want this baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it really painted into the propaganda. Oh, I just don't want it.
Yeah.
How can I get rid of it as fast as I can?
Right. But that creates like victim and villain and savior. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
like, if you can villainize like the drug addict woman or the abused woman or the young woman, right? And you can villainize her. And then you can save her, right? Then you can save something from it to again, promote yourself.
I still see adoptive parents will say, well, she chose me. She chose me. So, I mean, it's her fault. You're still blaming this woman that was in a crisis situation and made probably the hardest decision she'll ever make in her entire life. And you're putting that back on her. Mm-hmm. Do we forget that you were the one shopping for a human?
Hey, everyone, just a quick interruption to give you a sponsor shout out before we continue with this amazing episode. This ad is brought to you by one of our sponsors, Midi Health. You deserve to feel like yourself again. Perimenopause is no joke. Because what you're going through, it's very real. The sleepless nights, the skin changes, the mood swings, and for me, this body odor. But it's the feeling like your body is just doing its own thing. That's perimenopause. And no, it's not all in your head. That's why I love Midi Health. It's a virtual care clinic where expert clinicians actually understand women in midlife. They take your symptoms seriously, create a personalized care plan, and bill your insurance, just like a regular doctor's visit, and no hidden fees. You can get the support you need and your questions answered. Go to trymidi.com/AngelaG to book your visit and join over 200,000 women who trust Midi for their midlife care. That's trymidi.com/AngelaG because you deserve to feel like yourself again. I've seen you make content, and that has shifted my, you know, my perspective. And I don't even want kids, you know,
like right.
But just to hear, like, there are no unwanted children. There are just women in crisis.
Yeah. Women in crisis is children in crisis.
Yeah. Children in crisis. That's it. Yeah.
You know, I hate that we call these children unwanted because somebody out there always wants these children. I mean, every time we see an abandoned baby, the comment section is full of, if anybody is ever going to abandon a baby, come knock on my door. Okay, that's weird, but
really? Because I could have sworn I saw you outside of Planned Parenthood, not promote, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So,
yep. But again, and I don't think we ever ask, how did we get here?
Yes.
How did we get here? Because it's, I can't imagine it was just like, ew, get rid of it. like I'm throwing away a receipt of something. Exactly. What I mean?
Gretchen's book does a great job of highlighting that the vast majority of women who are denied an abortion go on to parent their own children because the thought of somebody else parenting this child is the furthest thing most people's mind. When we look at it, there's only about 18,000 newborn babies relinquished per year in the United States versus the 2 million adoptive couples that are just sitting on waiting lists for these newborn babies, which shows you who's it really about. It's about these people. It's not about these children. When you've got 45 couples to one child.
Right. Right.
The odds are off. numbers, the math ain't mathing.
Right.
And me.
Right. Cause that's how they position it. Right. Like there's a shortage. There's all of these, and I'm air quoting.
Okay? High in demand.
Like, right. There's all these unwanted children and nowhere to go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah.
They're just sitting in facilities somehow.
Yeah. So when was the moment when you're like,
this is all a lie?
Yeah. Like when were you like, this is fucked up?
You know, So adoptees have this thing called the FOG. It stands for fear, obligation, and guilt. Oh. And I do believe that a lot of society has their own version of FOG. We're going to see it with birth mothers, because we have a lot of birth mothers that lie to themselves that this was beautiful, because they've been indoctrinated with all the propaganda. We have even adoptive parents that can't see their role in this, their accountability. They're in their own fear, obligation, and guilt of whatever. So for us adoptees, the fear is abandonment, secondary abandonment of these people. You know, we've already been abandoned once. If I tell these people I am struggling with how I feel about my adoption, are they going to abandon me all over again? Am I going to lose what little shred of a family I have? I mean, it's so hard. We see biological kids that go no contact with their parents, and society is like, good job, you know, they abused you. You should go no contact.
Right.
Adoptees, we go no contact and we're met with, you ungrateful bastards. They should have left you in a dumpster. And it's like, wait, you don't want babies in dumpsters, or you do want babies in dumpsters? I'm confused.
Oh, but what you want is just like compliance, right? Like
You know, obligation. We have this obligation to keep up with the lie, to keep up with this fictitious belief that we are all frolicking in a forest somewhere, screaming how grateful, lucky, blessed we are to be adopted, and to lose everything that we had to be adopted. And then
do you think that there's obligation too for you to uphold the saviorism?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you're so great. You saved me. I need to be so grateful for you every single day.
Yep. Because we are perpetual children. I see this all the time with adoptees. We are perpetual children. We are infantilized as adults, as if when we do speak out about anything with the adoption industry, we are met with, well, you're ungrateful. You don't know what's best for you. These people tried to save you. All of it. And it goes back to just showing that this wasn't about me. Mm-hmm. It never was about offering a child safe external care, which should be the goal. It should not be, how can I own a child? How can I eradicate a child's entire history, family, medical, all of it, in one swipe of a pen and a judge's gavel? How can I offer this child the best safe external care? Adoption, that's the other thing with adoption. The autonomy is taken away from children. Who are you really hearing adoption stories from?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of what you said earlier too, we see a lot of this glamorized social media presentation. And like, we even see that from biological children and parents too, the exploitation of their own kids to promote lifestyle, to promote whatever image, you know. I don't think any kid should be blasted on the fucking internet, but that's just me.
I think when it comes to adopted children and foster children, what really hurts to see is these children having their trauma be dumbed down to this surface level. It's just
even dismissed. Yeah.
It's those signs that the little kids hold up, and it'll say 1,025 days in foster care, and now I'm adopted. Mm-hmm. So 1,025 days ago, this child went through a very traumatic act, and you are glorifying and reminding in a celebratory sign of that. And it's like, I don't see where the disconnect in society is. But then I also do, because through the lens of seeing the propaganda that we've sold, a lot of people don't understand that adoption in the United States, if the UN would, if the United States would ratify the UN's rights of a child, adoption in the United States breaks 15 out of 30 rights of a child.
Wait.
Mm-hmm. Number 8 is probably the most significant one, because that one says that a child is basically a child's birthright is their name, their family, their religion, their origins. That is your birthright according to the UN, everyone's birthright. And we sever that from children. We take children from other countries and bring them here, and we sever everything from them. Mm-hmm. Their language, culture, heritage, history, it all just gone. It does not matter. They need to acclimate. You're an American now.
May I ask a controversial question?
Absolutely. I love them.
Is this child trafficking? Hey friends, just jumping in here to do a quick sponsor shout out before we keep going with this amazing episode. This ad is brought to you by one of our sponsors, BetterHelp. Being single and child-free can sometimes feel isolating, and those negative patterns we carry, they can be really hard to break alone. That's why therapy can be so powerful. It provides the tools and guidance to help you navigate life on your own terms in your own way. BetterHelp makes therapy easier to start. You can fill out a quick questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist in just a few days, and switch anytime if the fit isn't right. You know we love discernment and choice. If you're ready to explore therapy, check out betterhelp.com/AngelaG for 10% off your first month. Because here, we're all about focusing on connection, self-awareness, and creating a life that feels meaningful, joyful, and fully ours. So check out BetterHelp today. Is this child trafficking?
Oh, absolutely. 100% legalized. Legalized human trafficking of children in every way.
Yeah.
Look at all the players. Look at all the hands. Look at all the money.
Right. The fact that this is like a pay-for-play situation.
Absolutely.
Instead of like...
all of it.
Yeah.
Private sector. It's all. Once Clinton signed the Child and Welfare Family Act, it fast-tracked adoptions through foster care. So now we got that whole beautiful term foster to adopt, which essentially leads people to believe that this is a free, cheap way to get children. That's human trafficking. You're paying for children.
Yeah.
Our birth certificates are changed. So legally, when an adoption takes place, our original birth certificates with whoever our birth parents are, that one is sealed away with the government. Only the government can access it. A new amended birth certificate is put in its place. So my birth certificate shows that these two non-genetic people gave birth to me.
Huh.
And that's the only certificate I have access to. In Utah, it used to be, up until this year, it used to be 99 years and one day before I could get my access to my, so dead. They wanted.
I was like, did I hear that correctly? Like, yeah. When the average lifespan's like 75, you're like, we'll wait to 100 years.
Yeah. Yep. That good old. So now some adopted parents actually pushed to have the law changed where at 18 now we can request our original birth certificates. And I don't see how the government can hold on to information about us that we can't even have. We are a class of citizens in this country that does not have the same rights and privileges as every other citizen.
Right. Well, just the fact that there's an amended version.
It's a lie.
Yeah.
Why can't it just have a drop down and say, these are the birth parents, these are the adopted parents.
Right. Which
then lead it open to just being a single parent. It would lead it open to being a same-sex couple. It would lead it open to so many other things. But at the end of the day, we are centering the child, which is what this should be about in the first place. It's the child's biology. It also severs our family medical history, which is scary. So if my genetic blood conditions, say it was some other genetic condition that I was found out to have, insurance could look at me and say, we're sorry, we're not paying for that because you have no legal genetic relative for us to confirm or deny that that's the case for you.
I'm just
legally severed from everyone, even kids that get separated in the foster care system. Could you imagine growing up for 10 years of your life with your, you know, you're 10, your sister's 7. You've had all those years with your sibling, and through crisis, you're separated, and then you're adopted into different families. You are no longer legally siblings. By law, you don't ever have to see each other, nothing. You are legally never siblings. If my half-sister died and they needed somebody to ID the body, I can't go ID her body. Mm. Legally, not my sibling.
So you just become property.
We're strangers. We're biological strangers.
Yeah, but you just become pawns and your humanness denied and severed and changed and altered in order to fit into.
And where in history have we seen this before?
Here we are. Correct.
It's a different playbook, but this one's a shiny, pretty playbook with bows and unicorns and sparkles called adoption. Mm-hmm. Don't see it as
trafficking.
Yeah. I mean, money, children are priced based upon their ethnicity, their gender, their age, and their abilities. How is that not trafficking? They don't show it anymore, but there was Everlasting Adoptions. They're still open and running, but they used to have a breakdown chart. And on that chart, it had their conventional program, which was an all white baby. Most top tier package you could buy was an all white baby. Then their mid program was a biracial baby, whether it's black, white, Hispanic, you know, it could be just a mixed baby or even an Asian baby. Then they had their full African American program. And that got you a full black child at a discount. So when you see a lot of white people adopting black children, side-eye it. Mm-hmm. Side-eye it. Wow, you know? Mm-hmm. And people don't want to look at this as a whole, because at the end of the day, people want to see that we're just frolicking in a forest, happy and
spring. Yeah, they want to see happy families. They want to see, like, children being, I mean, who doesn't, right? Like, I want to see kids happy and families happy. And I want to see that too, you know? So
I just want children to also retain their rights, retain their biology, retain their heritage, history, culture, their names. Hearing a lot of Asian, the adoptees within the Asian diaspora, having them have last names such as Smith, Johnson, or anything like that is hard for them, because when they go out, they don't represent
that
who they are. And it's another barrier to even their own culture has been stripped from them having their name taken. You know, and people don't really realize how names impact people. You know, if you were given a name and then you're adopted and it's just taken from you and a new one, because you're property to these people. So they're going to rename their property, just like picking up a dog at the shelter. You know, going to rename it if you don't like the name. Oh, I don't like Buffy. Let's go with, you know what I mean? Let's go with. You're smart now. And we're okay with it. And I think it's because we do not see children as autonomous beings capable of thought, capable of functioning, capable of doing things if we allow them to.
we see the becomingness of parents.
We see parents.
Yeah, well, that's the top tier is like, well, you're the parent. You're the one, this is what's most important is your ability to now parent and love and support necessarily, you know. Is there any, I mean, obviously you don't know every adoptive person.
And I don't speak.
Right. Are there ways that adoption is done well? Like, are there people who are fostering children and adopting children and it's, you know, it's okay, it's good, it's supportive of the child.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and what does that look like? you know?
I think what that would look like is children having the autonomy. When children have the autonomy over their story, to tell it when they're ready, to talk about it when they're ready, when they have trauma-informed adoptive parents that realize that this is a traumatic act for us to go through. And I think people do not want to recognize that because it shoos away the rainbow. Mm-hmm. You know, it brings in the clouds and the rainbow's gone. I feel as though it's really dependent on our adoptive parents to recognize that this is traumatic for us, to get us early intervention, to help us, to talk often. We should always know that we're adopted. It should never be this big moment when we're
18 or like 18, like BT dubs.
Bed, somebody's telling us that we're adopted.
Yeah.
And I know that people side eye, you know, well, what, you can't just take care of a child without adopting them. And yeah, you actually can. I mean, if your neighbor came over to you and was like, hey, I will be laid up for 3 months in the hospital, can you take care of my kids? You're not going to say, oh, well, I need to adopt them. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, yes, let's sign some temporary legal forms. Mm-hmm. A lot of these kids have already had their TPR happen, which is their termination of parental rights. So their parents do not have rights to these children to take them back. But there are, you know, and everything in the system still has problems. So even legal permanent guardianship is going to come with problems. We've seen Michael Orr from The Blind Side. He got put into a conservatorship. That is legal permanent guardianship. They use that to their advantage to take advantage of him. So it can have issues, but adoption still has issues. I am legally bound in a contract that I can't get out of. I can never get out of being adopted.
You never unadopt, and you can never unadopt your parents and be like, I don't claim them.
Never. But again, let's go back to that power and control. Who has power and control? The adoptive parents, because they can put their adopted children before the age of 18 at any point. They can put them back and re-adopt them out.
So I can just
try it.
Yeah.
Foster care. I almost feel like foster care is treated like a try it before you buy it.
But I mean, that even pisses me off about animals. I'm like, you fucking took that dog. Like, what did you think was going to happen?
Right.
You got a husky, for God's sakes. Like, you got the most difficult goddamn dog. Like, what did you think? And now after 3 months and the dog's torn up your house, you're like, I don't want this anymore.
Did you train?
Yeah.
Which would mean, did you get therapy?
Did you educate yourself on like how, yeah. Your home is your sanctuary. Quiet, clean, completely yours, and obviously free of children. And nothing sets the mood like a clean burning soy candle from Get a Whiff Candle Company. These scents are natural, long lasting, and totally free of the junk and toxins you don't want in your space. So they're perfect for winding down, turning up the cozy, or just enjoying your freedom without compromise. So you can shop now at getawhiffco.com and use the code Angela at checkout for 20% off. Light up your space your way.
Even embryo adoption, that is one that I want to see eradicated in my lifetime. And I know that that one is controversial for a lot of people.
I don't even know what that is. I have no...
You go to do IVF, obviously have to pull a lot of eggs, have them fertilized. So now they have all these fertilized eggs just sitting there. They have these fertilized embryos frozen on ice.
So I can take one?
You can absolutely adopt. My phone. You can absolutely adopt these embryos, have them implanted, and you are giving birth to a non-biological child.
Yeah. And I mean, I share that, like, again, as a woman who just doesn't want children, I'm like, well, right. Like, time out. And I understand you have this idea of what family can look like, but I'm like, if it's not happening in the way that you thought it would and that you were told it should in order to complete your vision and your fantasy of life, zoom out. Cause like, as a woman who has passed even like shops closed, we're in menopause. Okay. Shops closed. So even if I wanted to have kids, like I have to have come to
out.
Yeah. Like I've had to come to terms with family doesn't need to look like you and me and baby make three, right? Like family, I'm a family.
Yep.
This girl right here has her own motherfucking family. My exactly. friends are my family, the pets that I adopt, like the friends and the people in my life, like family is what doesn't always have to be fulfilled by this like natalism.
Yes, absolutely. And I wish more women would understand that. And it's not the men. The men don't really, they just want to see their seed out in the world.
I don't think they give a shit about that. I don't even think they fucking care about anything.
They're like me.
He doesn't even wash his ass. Okay. I don't think he cares about like where, you know?
The overall thing that I guess that I want to get out to people is that this isn't about children. We need to start looking at adoption through the lens of children, not through the lens of adults. We center adults in the conversation. It's National Adoption Awareness Month in November. And adoptees are taking that back. We're claiming it as National Adoptee Awareness Month. This should be about us. It shouldn't be about our adoptive parents, our birth parents, siblings, and the lot. And that is what we see is this huge push of we're happy. Look, we adopted, adopt. And us adoptees are over here like, hey, can we talk about our trauma?
Yeah. Can we tell you what this looks like from our point of view? And like, yes, I might be 6 years old holding up a sign, but you're not even cognitively aware at that time to even understand and process what's happening. And like, I have friends who have adopted and I think they're lovely people. And I think their kids are great and their family and from the outside, it seems like it's working, you know, again, I love that the whole
child.
Yeah. But I think like, this is part of the conversation is to like include this unwilling participant who could not consent to any of
us. Yeah.
And part of the conversation. And what I'm gathering is like to include their identity, their culture, their race, their significance, their background, their family, their DNA.
Yeah,
the conversation.
If you think about it, adoption is not the witness protection program, but we treat it as such. We treat it as if these children need to be completely eradicated from any family for their safety.
But that's how you get compliance, right? Like when you strip people's like identities away from them, then they have no place to plant roots. And
Exactly. It's almost as if we're taking, I drew a picture once and it was this tree and then on side of it was grafted on a palm tree.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt. I was a grafted on palm tree onto an oak tree. They're both trees, but can you really graft a palm tree onto an oak tree and expect it to flourish as a palm tree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Those are two different species and climates and what is it? Family? I don't know. It was a long time ago, but you know what I'm saying?
What we do to adopted children is we graft them onto these families and we just expect them to acclimate.
The countdown to Morocco is on. I'm calling all single and child-free women. Let's take an adventure for us. Imagine just wandering the souks of Marrakesh, riding camels at sunset, and sipping mint tea on a rooftop, all surrounded by women who are claiming their life and celebrating on their own terms. This isn't just travel. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience to connect, be bold, and live fully. So join me in Morocco, April of 2026, and claim this moment for you. There are only 4 spots left, so secure your spot today. Visit the show notes or the link in my bio on social media and make sure that you get in on this adventure. I can't wait to travel with you. We've gotten to the portion of the show.
Cards.
Where we play, for my 40th birthday, I got this like trivia game.
Oh, heck yeah. Oh.
And I'm like, this is amazing. So we're going to play a game called How Millennial Are You, which is a series of 3 questions that will get progressively harder as we go. Okay. Okay. So question 1, what popular children's book series featured a bespectacled young lad wearing a distinct red and white striped shirt that became difficult to find on each page?
Where's Waldo?
Dude, bum.
I love it.
Yeah.
Where's Waldo books?
I still love Where's Waldo books. Like, get out of here.
I did a Washington Post using Where's Waldo.
I love Where's Waldo. Okay. All right. This is a numbers game. So the answer, just a number. Ready?
Okay.
It's the number of house party films that were made.
Oh my God. I think possibly four.
Final answer.
Four.
Yeah. Two out of two. Four. Two out of two, babe. Two out of two.
Did I?
Yeah. House party four. Okay. Yeah. All right. Ain't gonna hurt nobody.
I feel like they're like.
I'm gonna find that and watch that today. Okay. Last question. Hardest one.
I'm rewatching Sabrina the Teenage Witch.
Isn't it great to go back and rewatch some of your childhood?
Some of them. Some of them. Some I go back and I'm like,
oof. Yeah. Or I love to watch 90210.
Oh, okay.
Like, I had no business watching this.
Yeah.
At the age that I was watching.
Told me that she goes back and watches old shows when she was a kid. It helps her remember things that were at that time. And I'm like, oh, that's so smart.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. With caution. Do that with caution.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. This is our last question. What links these clues together? Scorpion, Sub-Zero, and Raiden. I think I'm saying that right.
Oh my God.
Raiden, R-A-I-D-E-N, Raiden?
It's a movie, isn't it a movie?
Mm-mm.
Scorpion.
Sub-Zero, Raiden.
Ooh, I don't know. It feels like either a movie or an action figure person.
Closer. Closer with that one. Mortal Kombat.
Not finish him. Love that. Old school finish him and you would like rip the spine out. Yeah.
Yeah. And you just like, I just pressed all the buttons. I had
all the buttons. Yeah. The buttons. If you did a special move, you're like, how did I do it?
Yeah. I love that. Well, thank you for playing. Two out of two. We're adopting you into. Can we adopt you here? Will you accept this adoption?
Yeah, the best of my generation. I was in high school in the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah. We welcome you into millennials.
I'll take it.
Yeah. Okay. Where can people find you and learn more about your advocacy?
So I am pretty much just on Instagram at this point. Okay. TikTok turned into a whole thing. So Instagram, The Outspoken Adoptee. My website is thisisadoption.com, or it still links over at theoutspokenadoptee.com. I am processing of switching it over to This Is Adoption, just to kind of give it a broader scope. I didn't want it to feel like it was about me. Yes, there is an about me section. However, I wanted it to be more of a resource platform for people to kind of just understand more about adoption, more about birth mothers, birth fathers, what they experience, what they go through, mental health, places for adoptees to connect and find therapists that are informed with adoption competent trauma-informed therapists, and just, you know, make it more inclusive to adoptees and stuff.
Okay, I will.
Instagram mostly. I've tried to think about doing YouTube. We'll see. We'll see where it goes.
Possibilities.
Local here where I'm at and connect people in person. I love bringing people together in person and stuff. So, but yeah.
Cool. All right. I will link all of that, the website and your Instagram, in the show notes, and people who are interested in just kind of furthering their knowledge on this in this conversation.
And don't just listen to me. I am not the end all be all of adoption. I have a beautiful, amazing community. We all have our own different and varying experiences, opinions on things. I think the overwhelming agreement is that we just want better for children after us than what we got. You know, our adoption already happened. There's nothing that we can do to change our adoption. We can advocate for, you know, things that we're missing, but we really just want things better for these kids in crisis that are coming after us, that they deserve to have what we did not get.
Yeah.
Out of that, though. But yeah, you know, and check out a little shout out to my, also check out Laura High. She is the donor conceived communities little person. She would be another phenomenal.
Okay. We'll connect. We'll connect.
Me too, because that's our cousin in this whole thing that, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people that are childless have also gone the donor conceived route as well. And that is another amazing person to add to this conversation too.
Yeah. So many worlds that, like, again, as a, like, I don't want children. So, like, there's so many avenues and things that I'm like,
people need to have them.
Yeah. Then I'm like, oh, that's a thing. That is a thing that people do, I guess, you know?
People rock your world.
Oh, I got to sit down, make sure I'm ready for that, you know? All right, Desiree, thank you so much for being here, for sharing your story. I've learned today. I have learned. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. Everybody, make sure that you go follow Desiree, reach out if you need anything, visit her website for more information. I thank you all for being here. And as always, y'all, go be epic.